The involuntary reductions would be on top of another 2,100 separation notices the Army issued in fiscal year 2014, some of them to soldiers who were serving in Afghanistan and other active combat zones at the time, says General Daniel Allen, the Army's Vice Chief of Staff.
Just over 50% of those soldiers served over two or more combat tours. So these are soldiers that answered the call multiple times to meet the requirements that the nation had. Now, first and foremost, this is not a choice the United States Army took. This is a budget-driven requirement.
Army officials say if the original Budget Control Act caps return in 2016, as current law requires, they'll need to shrink to a size of 420,000 active duty soldiers. But even to reach their current target of 450,000, Allen says separation boards will need to discharge at least 2,000 soldiers against their wishes per year for the next several years. The Army's goal has been to give those service members at least 10 months' notice and deliver the bad news as respectfully as possible, given the circumstances.
Every single officer or non-commissioned officer that we asked to involuntarily separate was briefed before the board was held by a general officer, first general officer in the chain of command. And then when the board completed its process and identified those for separation, they were briefed again face-to-face as much as possible. In a couple cases, they had to have the general officer contact by phone or VTC with the immediate commander present to ensure that we treated these people who had served so courageously with the absolute utmost dignity and respect. And our objective in notifying people that were forward deployed was to give them the maximum time possible to transition effectively to the next phase of their life, and ensure that we set them up for success, to include providing opportunities for mentors from industries around their communities that they intend to go back to.
The Marine Corps, on the other hand, has managed to mostly avoid involuntary separation so far during its own drawdown from 202,000 to 182,000. But the full BCA caps would push the service to a smaller size of 175,000. General John Paxton is the Marines' assistant commandant.
To date, we have deliberately not broken faith with Marines. Almost all of our separations have been voluntary. We have had low double digits of majors who are not selected to lieutenant colonel and staff sergeants who are not selected to gunnery sergeant who we did not continue, but they were afforded other venues for separation at that time. We do have a concern that if the BCA caps come back and we have to go to 175,000, that at some point we could be forced to do larger numbers of involuntary termination.
As for the Navy and Air Force, since their budgets are less manpower intensive, and because both services already made significant cuts to uniformed end strength over the last 15 years, officials say they neither plan nor can they afford to make any further reductions. But they, like the other services, have grave concerns about how a return to the budget caps would affect their civilian workforces. Admiral Michelle Howard, the Vice Chief of Naval Operations, says the Navy is still dealing with large maintenance backlogs that started to build up when DoD civilians, including civilian aircraft maintainers, were put on involuntary furlough in 2013, the first time the caps went into effect. She says in addition to the lost work hours, the furlough experience caused many retirement-eligible employees to leave early. F-18 fighter jets, for example, are still waiting an average of 18 months to be processed through depots.
And so we already had and are living with the impact of that short period of sequester. We now are in the time frame where we are hiring the artisans as quickly as we can, several hundred this year, to help get us to being able to assess those aircraft quickly and then repair them as quickly as we can. So for us, right now, the limitations for the depot is not the money. The limitation is literally getting the people hired and in place, for the people who are new, getting them trained. But there's also another piece to it. I think there's a trust factor there, that when we want to bring people, proud civilians in to do all this support for our aircraft, or whether it's ships, they have to trust that the work's going to be there, that they can live their lives, pay their mortgages, and not worry about being furloughed. so that they want to have a job with the government.
General Larry Spencer, the Air Force's Vice Chief of Staff, says his service is also experiencing lingering effects from the 2013 furloughs, both on its equipment and on its workforce.
When we sequestered a year and a half or so ago, we stopped flying airplanes, which meant now pilots can't train, so they lose their certification over time. Maintenance folks have nothing to work on. So we had airplanes sitting down. Now they're not going to the depot. You've got this stack up. Don't have airplanes available. And so it's not like if sequestration is suddenly lifted, you know, everything works well. No, you've got this backlog that you have to now push through a funnel. My son, who works for the government, he's a computer science guy. When we furloughed, this is similar to what I heard from a lot of other civilians, he was really frustrated because he said, I can go work somewhere else and make more money. I want to be a part of the government. But he said, I got a family and two of my grandkids. And if every time there's a budget dispute, they lay me off. He said, I don't know if I can do that for the long term. So it took a real toll.
In Washington, Jared Serbu, FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM.